It's time for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Doug is a certified financial planner, providing you with a personal financial hotline to answer your questions about tax planning, investments, retirement planning, estate planning, and education planning. Doug and Linda are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing financial and investment services since 1983. Doug and Linda will be answering your questions on WPTF's phone lines anytime during the next hour. Call 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Call toll-free 1-800-662-7979. And for mobile phones, it's star 680. And now, Doug and Linda Lewis and Money Matters.
Hello there, North Carolina. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner, once again welcoming you to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters with Doug and Linda has been providing you with a personal financial hotline for all of your questions about investments, estate planning, tax planning, money management, and retirement planning for over 20 years. And again, with me as usual tonight is my wife, Linda, who works with me in our firm, Lewis Financial Management.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Doug and I are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing investment in financial advice since 1983.
For over 20 years, we've been answering your questions on the WPTF phone lines. They are your questions and our answers.
So sit back and enjoy, or if you're free, call us tonight on the open lines. We'll take your calls anytime during the next hour. You're free to call in and ask any financial question about your own personal financial planning. Call us at 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Or you can call us toll-free long distance at 1-800-662-7979.
Well, financial planning is everyone's business, and still for most folks, money matters are just a big puzzle. Folks have questions about planning for retirement, planning for a child's college education. They don't know the difference between financial planning and money management. They want to know a lot these days. They want to know what's a mutual fund, what's a limited partnership, what's a REIT, what's a will? What's a living will? And yes, it really can confuse you, but you're not alone. Because in a world crowded with new investments, changing tax laws, rapidly evolving insurance products, and volatile economic cycles, more and more people are looking for clear direction in their financial lives. And yet, unfortunately, the busier and the more successful they are, the less time they have to sort out their financial affairs. And people are asking, is there any solution?
Well, yes, Doug, there certainly is a solution. Out of this increasingly complicated financial environment has come a new breed of professionals that are trying to solve people's money puzzles. And that's the certified financial planner.
It's the certified financial planner who offers something that people don't get from the traditional stockbroker, money manager, accountant, insurance agent, or bank trust officer. And that's a way to consolidate all aspects of people's financial affairs into one financial plan. It's the certified financial planner who knows how to pull together all six areas of a client's financial life.
Doug, I think for many people, the first area of financial planning is cash flow planning, with questions about their emergency fund, their mortgage, their credit cards, and reducing their debt.
Well, yes, Linda, and yet for many people, the second area of financial planning is retirement planning. Those who are working want to know how to compute what they'll need to live on during retirement and how much they should be saving for retirement. They want to know what investments they should choose from the choices in their company's 401k plan. Others are retiring and have received a lump sum payout option from their company's retirement plan, and they want to know, should they take it, and if so, how should they invest it?
Well, Doug, the third area of financial planning that must be dealt with is estate planning. For most people, over their working years, their estate has grown. How can they reduce their estate taxes? And they wonder, are their simple wills sufficient, or maybe they should be considering the complicated world of trusts?
If that's the third area, Linda, the fourth area of financial planning cannot be overlooked. This is tax planning. People are interested in both tax reduction strategies and tax reduction investments, home mortgage interest, charitable giving, tax shelters, tax-free bonds, questions about capital gains taxes, estate taxes, gift taxes, and how to sell real estate tax-free using trusts. What a confusion.
Well, Doug, we can't forget the fifth area of financial planning, which is insurance planning. How much life insurance does a family really need? Do they have too little insurance or maybe too much insurance? Should they have whole life, term, or universal? Should they have long-term nursing care coverage?
You're right, Lynn. And of course, the sixth and most important area of financial planning is investment planning. Here, the questions never stop. What's the best way to diversify my investments? Is now a safe time to invest in stocks? What about bonds? What kind of stock mutual funds? Bond mutual funds, equipment leasing partnerships, REITs, CDs, gold, annuities.
So, Doug, it seems that at last it's time for people to understand that a certified financial planner is really the only one who can tie together all six parts of their financial puzzle. And to you out there listening, if you've got a question on your mind about cash flow planning, retirement planning, estate planning, tax planning, insurance, or investments, call us now on the open lines and we'll answer your financial planning questions. Those numbers to call are 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Out of towners, call us toll free at 1-800-662-7979. And if you just want to sit back and listen to the callers through the years, welcome to the show.
Securities offered through HBEC Inc. Investment advice through Lewis Financial Management. Lewis Financial Management and HBEC Inc. are not affiliated.
Well, I think it has cooled off just a tad bit, don't you?
I like your humor, Linda.
Well, I mean, it rained yesterday. I thought that was great
rain.
I
think it's
we
down
need
to
more
the,
rain.
Probably only in the 90s. Well, anyway, welcome everybody.
Well, yeah, I remember when we got in the car earlier today, it was like 112 degrees in the car.
That's right.
Or was it 116? I can't remember.
I think it was 112.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for joining us once again on Money Matters. And I believe...
This is Linda Lewis. And this is Doug Lewis.
And this is Deborah Lewis.
And so, if you have a question, feel free to call us on the open lines. And if that last caller, you can call back. Those numbers to call are 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. And if you're out of town, it is toll-free at 1-800-662-7979. Well, Doug, interesting articles in the Wall Street Journal and in other publications and news about some folks that are losing jobs again in the Triangle.
Yeah, that was pretty sad what we picked up on this week. Of course, we do know that Cisco has announced that they're laying off 6,500 employees, and that's going to affect some of our listeners. If this is you and you're facing what is the downsizing that Cisco's going through, don't try and do it on your own. Call Lewis Financial Management at 872-7000, and we'll see if we can help you. The other news about layoffs that I noticed was Victory Pharma, that's a California drug company in Cary, which is laying off 179 people in North Carolina. And it said that Victory Pharma will be laying off all of their employees by September 8th. If you are working for Victory Pharma and are getting that, that shocking news, then don't panic. There are things you can do. And I think last week we actually talked about the six things that a person can do or should be doing when faced with these types of
job loss.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Job losses, life changes.
Well, I know that one of the prepping
steps that you can take
for retirement is that you should ask yourself the question, when should I start taking Social Security benefits?
So if you're fortunate enough to be able to take early retirement benefits from Social Security, this is going to be a big question that you have to take. Let's take John's call first, Lynn, Deborah, and then we'll come back to what if you've lost your job. John, Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner, how can I help you?
Are you there, John?
Yes.
Welcome to the show. This is Doug and Linda Lewis. How can we help you this evening?
Well, hi, Doug. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you this evening? What's your financial problem?
Well, I was an independent contractor, self-employed, and since the recession and the bad economy and all, I've been severely underemployed for the past year or so, and I'm having a difficult time trying to readjust to a limited amount of income, and I'm trying to figure out what do I need to do about, you know, things like saving and budgeting and trying to set up a retirement all over again since I've lost everything basically through the recession. I'm trying to figure out what my first step would be to recovery.
How old are you, John?
I'm 46 years old.
46. You married or single?
Just went through a divorce.
So you're now suddenly single?
Yes, sir. Suddenly single.
And you have no income, or you say you're self-employed. What kind of income do you have?
No, I was self-employed.
Oh, now you have no income.
And now I'm a wage earner, earning, you know, substantially less.
I need some numbers to answer questions, John.
Well, say my income has went from maybe $130,000 a year to down to about $36,000 a year.
All right, so I've got a single male, age 46, earning $36,000 a year. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, sir.
All right. What are your new living expenses? Do you have any idea of what they are now that you've been relieved of the burden of a wife?
Well, basically none, really. To give you a little bit more insight on my situation, I used to own a home and own my own big truck and things like that, and now I don't no longer own the home.
Yeah, John, let me help you a little bit. Do you eat any food?
Yes.
Then I need to know how much your living expenses are, what you spend for food, for gasoline, for your rent, if you're renting, all of your living expenses. Nobody has zero expenses.
Well, I could get by with about $250 a week for my living expenses.
All right, so about $1,000 a month.
Yes.
Okay, so we've got $3,000 a month coming in as income, and we've got $1,000 a month going out as expenses. So you've got $2,000 left over each month before taxes. And what about any investments or anything left over, or did the divorce wipe you out?
One quick correction, that's $2,000 left over after taxes.
That's what I said. No, before taxes. Okay. No, before.
That's after taxes. That's after tax income. The $36,000 is after tax income.
Oh, okay. That's even better then. So you've got, I'm with you now. So you've got $2,000 a month to put aside somewhere. What do you have in the way of assets that are left?
Zero.
Okay.
I've lost everything.
Okay. So, you're starting from scratch. The good news is that you're still in your 40s. You're not in your 60s. You've got maybe 20 years of earning power in front of you, and you want to know how to rebuild your life and what's the first step. Is that it?
Exactly.
All right. I would suggest, first of all, with that kind of surplus, you should meet with a certified financial planner who is fee-based. Now, I may sound like I'm self-serving because I am a fee-based certified financial planner, but you don't have to meet with me, but you should meet with someone who can walk you through the steps of what to do, who's not trying to sell you products, okay? And in that process, you need to do a living expense analysis. That's going to be number one. So the financial planner should go ahead and walk you through a living expense analysis, then should walk you through what options are available in the world of investments to start rebuilding your life. If you're a salaried employee, you no longer have the option of doing a SEP IRA or that sort of thing. You may have some options at work. Do you have any options at work?
Yeah, we do have a 401k, and it's my understanding that you could put a maximum of about $16,000 annually towards your 401k at this particular time. Is that correct?
That is correct. However, the bigger question is how much should you contribute? What is there any matching by the employer?
Yes, they match up to $1,000.
$1,000 per pay or per month?
Annually.
That's all?
That's it.
Well, then that would be the amount that I would contribute.
Okay.
Okay.
Why is that?
Well, you can do better on your own selecting the investments than limiting yourself to just the investment choices that they give you.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The real question isn't how can I save money from taxes, because basically after you retire, you'll pay more taxes, not less taxes, when it comes out of a 401k. So don't think about it that way. Think instead of where's my money going? How can I invest my money to accumulate financial independence for myself? And therein lies the selection availability. Now, if they're matching, say, 3% or 5% of your income, then for sure you want to contribute that, because that's free money they're giving you. But beyond that, I usually like to look very, very carefully. And again, the fee-based financial planner, he should have a list of all of your 401k assets, I mean choices, before you follow what I'm saying. But the general principle is to go ahead and start accumulating that entire $2,000 a month. The way you do that is what we call a pay-yourself-first plan. A pay-yourself-first plan is getting that $2,000 a month going into an investment or investments automatically at the beginning of the month, either through your 401k, which is usually my second choice, or on your own, which is usually my first choice, but selecting investments that you have helped selecting. Because you can step into a cow patty, which is sort of messy if you don't know what you're doing. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
However, the good news is if you've got 20 years of accumulation at $2,000 a month, you could accumulate a fair amount and probably achieve financial independence in far less years than you were thinking. So lemon may turn out to be lemonade after this divorce. If you want to call my office, I'll be happy to go ahead and schedule an appointment to meet with you. My office number is 919-872-7000. You could also go to my website,
LFMAdvisor.com.
And I hope that gets you a little bit of an answer, John.
Yeah, and John, I would encourage you to just jot down any specific questions that you have about your situation. And one of those may be, you know, what about estate planning? You know, if you had a will prior to when you were married, you may want to change that.
Good point.
Exactly.
You know, things to update.
One more quick question that comes to mind if I have the time there.
Go ahead.
Well, during the initial phase of this recession, I had to file bankruptcy to protect my business and protect my home, of course, and, you know, several other assets. And I did not complete the bankruptcy. It was dismissed. And so
I need a question, John. What's the question?
How do those accounts that did not get paid off during the bankruptcy, how do they affect me now? Do I still have to deal with them now or what? I haven't heard from anybody, so I don't know what way to go with that.
That's a legal question. You started with an attorney in a bankruptcy proceeding?
Yes.
I would ask the attorney that question.
Okay.
That I don't know. I don't know if I can't answer that. I really don't know. But the shorter answer is I don't care about you going through bankruptcy because it will only affect your debt later on, your ability to borrow later on, and I don't want you borrowing money anyway. So you should still be able to accumulate the same way. As far as those liabilities, that's a question for the lawyer.
Yeah, you paid him some money to file the bankruptcy, so you may want to just go back to him and ask for his assistance.
But do feel free to give us a call at the office. That's 919-872-7000. We'd love to hear from you, John.
I certainly would. And I appreciate you guys taking my call, and you've kind of gave me a ray of hope with that 20 years of
all right. Right. Well, that's what we like to hear, a ray of hope. You're going to make it. Okay, John.
Thanks.
Take care. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. And if you've got a question, feel free to call us on the open lines at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. If you're out of town coming back from the beach, call us on the toll-free line at 1-800-662-7979.
You know, Lynn, I can never mention and put any sort of numbers that are tantalizing on the air because we are regulated. However, at $2,000 a month for 20 years, do you know how much that is?
How much?
$480,000, a little shy of $500,000. That's with zero growth. So it's very possible that he could accumulate quite a bit and achieve his own goals in far less than 20 years.
Well, I just want to say that I'm real happy that we put a ray of sunshine in someone's life today.
Okay, back to other lemons that have been happening that may be lemonade. That's a lemon that turns into lemonade very often.
Well,
but there's also, we were talking about the folks at Pharma who are losing their jobs and the folks at Cisco. And again, it may be a lemonade situation because as we started to say right before John's call came in, the question was about
What to do about your possibility of taking Social Security benefits.
Yeah, and if you're 62 years old or older, there's a big question there that you want to have some help. Should you take it or not take it? And the short answer is going to be whether you've got another income source of less than $14,000 or more than $14,000, because the Social Security Administration allows you to earn $14,000 a year and not have to give up any of the money and still get your Social Security payment. If you earn more, then you have to give it back.
If you don't have a job already lined up or you don't think you're going to be getting one real soon, is that when you should consider taking those benefits? Can you reverse that decision?
You can. You can't reverse it. You can turn it off.
Turn it off. Okay.
And herein is the issue where you need to work with a certified financial fee-based planner. It's because we have to put two other pieces or two other numbers into the equation.
What are those two other numbers?
Number one is, what are the living expense needs with this new lack of a job story?
Okay.
And number two, what assets do you have that can support you? If you have plenty of assets, like an investment portfolio that can support you, then it may make sense to and you think you're going to get another job real soon.
Okay.
It may make sense to hold back and not start that early Social Security payment.
Okay.
On the other hand, if you've got a large 401k and you're under 59 years old.
Ooh, large penalty.
Well,
maybe,
but it's not.
Not
so simple a decision.
Oh.
Let's say that you've accumulated $500,000 in a 401k and you're in the fifth, you're in your, 55 years old and you work for Pharma or Cisco and you just lost your job. Well, now we have to figure out if we roll it over into an IRA, totally tax free, which we can, we can start drawing a monthly check if we want, which we can. We have to figure in how much is the tax. And what about this extra 10%? But the good news about that is that you can turn that on and off whenever you want.
I see.
On an as-needed basis, right?
On an as-needed basis. So you could start taking checks once a month, and after 6 months, if you get another job, turn it off, and you only paid the 10% on those first six checks.
That's a huge decision. I mean, that's not one to try and figure out on your own.
It's a big decision. You're right, Deborah. Not only so, there's even a way to go ahead under Section 72T of the IRS code, the Internal Revenue Code, to go ahead and start taking it without paying the 10% penalty. But then we have to figure 5 years. So there's a lot of decisions, but there may be a lot of lemonade waiting with these lemons if you are one of those people. Now, the second question after Social Security is the one that you mentioned, Debs. Am I going to be able to get another job? Am I going to get another job waiting for me? And how much should I really realistically expect? That's important because it ties into the other questions about Social Security and about getting my support for my investments. The third question that we talked about last week, what was that, Lynn?
Should you pay off your mortgage?
That was a question. Should you pay off your mortgage? Big question. Generally, the answer is go slowly. Because that's a dangerous, but it's a feel-good, but it has ramifications on both sides. And the knee-jerk reaction so often is, oh, pay off the mortgage and be debt-free. That sometimes is the worst thing you can do.
Well, if you're someone who's just lost your income, why would that be a question? Why, from where would you be getting the money to pay off the mortgage?
From your investments.
From your investments. So if you're someone with an investment portfolio.
Of, let's say, $500,000, you've just lost your job, and you have a $200,000 mortgage, and right away, should I go ahead and take $200 from my $500, pay off my mortgage, and now I have no mortgage, but my investment portfolio shrank from $500 to $300, and the income I can get from it just got cut more than 50%.
Is that usually coming from someone who is coming from it from a fear base?
Well, I think part of it has to do with my expenses, and that mortgage payment could be, it's a bigger amount. And so the people back into it with the wrong mindset, I think.
It's a real hard one to do. As Deborah said, there's a lot of emotions tied to it.
Mm.
The last question really was, what happens if I have a medical situation that stops me from making decisions? Am I prepared? Because sometimes losing a job can be very, very stressful. And therein lies issues like, what about a revocable living trust? What about a durable power of attorney? What about a healthcare power of attorney? Each of these questions are ones that need to be nailed down, answered carefully with the help of a professional. But the short answer is, there may be lemonade waiting for you.
Wow. Well, that's good news, because we have a lot of people in our listening area who are going to be considering all of these things.
You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. If you've got a question, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on the open lines at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. And if you're out of town, it is toll free at 1-800-662-7979.
Well, there was an article recently about the other midlife crisis.
What does that mean?
Well,
what does that mean, Doug?
Well, let me see. It depends on who's answering the question. A lot of wives will say, gee, when my husband got his midlife crisis.
He bought a Corvette.
He bought a Corvette. He did some crazy things. And a lot of men will say, when my wife hit her midlife crisis, all of a sudden, she started doing some wild and crazy things and buying all kinds of this and that. But this other midlife crisis, what was that article all about?
It was talking about how, unfortunately, we have assumptions that when we're basing our financial decisions on them, it might just result in another midlife crisis, realizing that you've based your financial decisions on wrong assumptions.
So the article, was that a Wall Street Journal article?
It was a Wall Street Journal article.
So if the whole midlife crisis they're talking about is sudden realization that you got wrong assumptions, what was the first assumption that they brought to the table?
Well, people assume that their income is going to keep rising steadily until they're 65.
I'm glad the article pointed that out. That is absolutely wrong. Our experience shows us that usually by the time you're into your 40s, your income has leveled off and is not going to be growing that much more. Data shows that income peaks when people hit their 40s and remains flat afterwards. So if you've got a set of assumptions and building in, I'm going to keep making this much, much, much more, increases year by year, better redo your assumption on that income.
And like our current situation, many people believe that they're going to be employed until they turn 65 or 62 or whichever age they plan to retire. But you might lose your job in your 50s, and finding another salary is difficult.
That's a very good point, Deborah. You know, Linda and I, back in the late 80s, we were used to seeing people who were shocked that they had actually lost their job. Remember the early Sears people, Linda?
Sears,
the downsizing,
and then
the early
IBM.
IBMers. Because prior to that, the common mentality was, I'm going to work forever, or at least I'm going to work all my working years, and my employer, Big Daddy, is going to take care of me. We had defined benefit pension plans, and I can depend on that. I'm just got to be a good employee, do a good job, and I'm protected. But then, because of the global tightening and shrinking, and the competitions overseas, virtually every major company has felt it. And now the public is quite aware of the fact that never know how safe your job is.
A lot of outsourcing to India and
places where
job
business
transitions. Yeah. And so people are sometimes assuming incorrectly.
So what would happen if you suffered a 30% pay cut or found yourself out of work, let's say at 60, you know, 5 years earlier than you expected? You know, if that is the question, how does one know if you are prepared?
What'd the article say?
Well, it said basically to sit down with someone and find out if just your investments are going to be enough, or what your Social Security benefits might be, these kind of things.
The true financial planning approach should always be one that takes worst case assumptions. Are you prepared under worst case assumptions? And one of those worst case assumptions might be just that. If I get a 30% pay cut, am I ready? You should be able to say you're ready.
Probably also check your savings, or if you're trying to avoid this unexpected, you know, bad thing happening without you knowing what to do with it, is to assume now that there's that possibility and go ahead and start saving 20% instead of that 10% we usually hear about.
That's very good, Deborah. Increase the savings amount in your pay yourself first plan, and also onto the assumptions. Even if you feel your job is nice and safe, I would say never assume more than cost of living increase.
Okay.
Don't assume you're going to be getting pay raises every year. Assume maybe a cost of living increase.
So the simplest way to prepare for lower pay later in life is to save more and to spend less, or both, right now. Start now. Don't wait. Because if you behave as though your income had dropped by 20%, then you can set aside the rest for a retirement, right?
Absolutely.
You'll have that cushion.
And I think that's the safest thing, is to assume that that tomorrow's pay raise, if you did think that you were going to be able to expect that, is no longer there. We've seen that.
So that was the first assumption. That was the first midlife crisis, the assumption that was false, that I'm going to always have pay increases. What was the next one?
Well, also, some people assume that the longer they work, the higher their Social Security benefits will be.
Well, that's not necessarily correct either. In many cases, falling wages in fewer years turn out to result for a lower Social Security benefit. So that also...
I found that really surprising, because there are a lot of general statements out there that it's going to be an average of the amount of years and the amount of pay that you did earn over those years. But I don't know, is that calculation new, or has it always been that way, that it's going to... you know, be a calculation that's based on the most recent years?
No, it's always been a certain number of years. But the question is, the surprise that can be when you turn a certain age and you happen to have changed your job in the past. If you were, let's say, covered by Social Security since 1975, they'd be one story. It was a maximum. But on the other hand, if you had lost your job and didn't work for the final 5 years, then your benefit would be less than it was in the first case. But again, I think it's wise to realize that my assumptions on Social Security may be wrong. Just that I'm working longer and I'm going to get more.
What is what was the third assumption that they made in this article? I think that was when they were talking about that you would be the savings that you might have thought that would be enough wouldn't be enough.
Some folks do assume that they'll be able to spend 4% of their 401k loot each year during their retirement. So whatever they had accumulated in 401k money, that they would be able to enjoy that when they're retired.
Yeah, that's also a false assumption, because it depends so much on what your investments are earning in the earning years. Your savings are going to depend on earnings, which may not pan out. Investment returns could be disappointing. I would not use any sort of assumption like that. And when we talk about assumptions, I guess we're talking about building some sort of a spreadsheet.
Okay, something that would be along the lines of do-it-yourself or
right.
what kinds of things you're thinking in the back of your head, and then when you start itemizing them on a piece of paper?
Right.
You know, we do find that in these last 20 years since we've done the radio show and clients that have come in to meet with us, typically the typical person out there does save somewhere, but it's mostly in 401k money, right?
That's right.
And so those 401k accounts can grow pretty large. But the assumption that you can depend on that money.
Yeah, it's not that easy just to say, I can depend on it. Usually those assumptions are based on a depleting formula that says, if I spend 4% a year, it will last all the way through my life. Well, that means if I live 1 year past that assumption, when my money ran out on my assumption, I'm broke. I don't like those kinds of assumptions. I like to work at it a totally different way. And there's another issue that's really big. It's how much am I going to spend? Most people, you know, assume that when they retire, they will spend less.
Not always so.
I would say 90% of our clients that have come to us through the years end up spending more after retirement rather than less. Why would that be?
Well, part of it may be that they're paying a little bit more for insurance.
That's part of it. That's usually not the big dollar.
Well, it's just the cost of living and things just going up in price.
You know what it really is?
It's travel and entertainment.
Yeah, and vacation. All these years you've been waiting and waiting till you don't have an 8-9 to 5 job or 8-6 job.
So you want to go to Europe and
now let's go to
Europe.
Now let's take a cruise. Now let's do this. And you should. That's right.
And
so our experience is you probably have got an extra $10,000 or $20,000 of expenses that are going to be there that you weren't spending before.
Cause you didn't and if you're a grandparent, got to take care of those grandkids. Got to spoil them. Anyway, if you're listening to our show, you've joined us on Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. And we've been talking about retirement issues and assumptions that people have in retirement. And if you have a question about your situation, give us a call on the open lines at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. Out of towners, you can call us at toll-free at 1-800-662-7979. And I believe we have another caller.
Hi, Kate. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
We have been talking to a financial planner, and he has suggested a variable annuity to supplement some of our other retirement investments.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know what your opinion of that kind of an investment is.
Tell me a little bit about your situation, and maybe I can fine-tune my answer.
Okay.
How old are you?
59.
You're 59 years old. Are you married or single?
Married.
Married. What's your income?
About nine. Well, now it's very much lower than it used to be. It's about $65,000 a year now.
And that's coming from the husband or the wife?
The husband.
That's coming from the husband. Is the wife getting does she bring any income in?
Very small amount.
All right. Now, the wife or the husband, who's 59?
I am.
The wife is 59. How old is the husband?
61.
Husband's 61.
And he will be fully retired when he reaches 62.
All right. So his income is going to drop next year.
Yes.
All right. Now, looking at retirement income, well, first of all, let
me back up. He's partially retired now, which is why his income has already dropped.
All right.
But actually, his income should increase when he's totally retired because of the investments we have.
Well, I'm going to ask you about that next.
Okay.
But I want to know about the guaranteed income.
Uh-huh.
From his pension, and is he going to take early Social Security, or what's he going to do?
Yes.
Okay, so what is the estimated guaranteed income going to be next year when he's 62?
I only think in after-tax terms.
Okay.
So that's what I'll give you.
All right.
It's about $50,000 a year.
All right. So it could be about $50,000 guaranteed. And then what are your living expenses on an annual basis? I imagine the financial planner went over that in depth with you.
You know what?
What?
I don't know the answer to that question. I could do it, but I'd hold you on the phone.
Well, I mean, when you met with your financial planner, didn't you spend a lot of time going over your expenses?
No, we didn't.
Then you didn't meet with a financial planner.
Okay.
No, you must have met with a salesperson.
Well, actually, it was a salesperson.
Okay.
He's the one who's trying to sell this.
Well, we want to be very careful about definitions. You see, we want to find out a financial planner plans, and a true financial planner, a certified financial planner who is charging you a fee for the time you're spending there with them, whether it's an hourly fee or a fixed fee, which is the only kind that you should be seeing, by the way, that kind of planner should start with your living expense needs and then back into the kinds of questions.
Our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000.
For the moment, let's assume that your expenses are $50,000 a year.
Well, they're not, but anyway, we'll assume that for this exercise.
Right. Most people underestimate their expenses. You have to build in there your desired number of vacation, travel expenses. That many people travel more after they retire. Gifts to the children, clothing, all the other things that happen. But if you're saying that you're absolutely sure that his pension and Social Security is going to cover your lifestyle with all the luxuries that you may or may not want, then you don't need to touch any investment income. Now, if that's the case, let's go over to the investments. What do your investments look like right now?
Well, our investments look very good.
No, I mean, what are they?
Oh, what are they? They're bonds, mutual funds.
All right. How much do you have in bonds?
I'm just looking here because I've got all that written out. In bonds, we've got $85,000 in one bond fund. We have about $500,000.
And what else do you have? Is that the majority of your portfolio?
No, we've got another $59,000. We have two IRAs. One's $82,000, the other's $49,000. We have some other stock investments that are around $300,000 in various stocks. And then my husband's profit sharing, which he owns his own company, at this point is $310,000.
All right, you've got a rather complicated situation when the numbers start building up, and you've got a terrible portfolio. I don't like it personally. Okay. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the air going through each of the items, but overall, it looks to me like my real question is, why are you going for a variable annuity? Because a variable annuity, although it will let you defer paying tax on the growth, it's going to also be taxable in your estate at the time that you die, and there'll be no step-up in basis.
Okay.
So
well, we're considering it, but that's why I was calling for your opinion too.
Annuities, you understand a variable annuity is an insurance contract.
Right.
By the way, which one are you looking at?
I'd rather not go into that.
Because that's the crucial issue. You see, a variable annuity is an insurance contract that wraps around mutual funds. So it's the funds themselves that are the most important part, not the insurance contract. Annuities are insurance contracts that work sort of like a non-deductible IRA. You can put in as much as you want, but taxes are deferred until you take it out. Now, you're 59, so you don't have to worry about the 59 penalty. You can start taking money out when you want. But you're paying a charge for an annuity. Unlike a fixed annuity, which guarantees a conservative rate of return, a variable annuity lets you pick your own investments from the different menu of mutual funds, but your return is going to vary according, you know, to the fund's performance. The insurance portion of that variable annuity guarantees that if you die before you start withdrawing the money, then your beneficiaries are going to receive all that you put in, but they will pay tax on the increase. As opposed to if you have $500,000, how much are you going to put into the variable annuity? What were you thinking of putting in?
$250,000.
Okay, so you put in $250,000, and since you're only 59 years old, you're a relatively young woman, you live another 35 years, and it grows to be $2 million. Well, if you had $250,000 in a mutual fund that grew to be $1 million, let's say, $2 million, and you then died, they would get that amount. They could sell that $2 million and pay no capital gains tax.
I think I need to call you off the air.
I appreciate the sensitivity of trying to be specific when confidentiality sometimes is very important to people. But I hope that gives you at least something to start with.
It does.
Yeah, and you know, Kate, we're real happy that you and your husband, you know, I'm sure you're hardworking people. You've accumulated these assets. You've been blessed. But you want to have some direction, right?
Right.
So that, you know, whatever his exit strategy is from the business, and of course, when you all decide you're not going to be working.
That's next year.
I mean, you know what I mean? When you wanted to just be retired and travel and do the things that interest you at this stage of your life, that you'll be able to do it with ease.
Mm-hmm.
And working with a financial planner, and particularly a certified financial planner that's fee-based, can assist you in helping you and your husband get that direction. Yeah, Kate, if you'll call the office, I'll be happy to go through that in detail.
Uh-huh.
That number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000.
Okay.
Bye now.
Well, Doug, there are folks out there that get sold variable annuities.
There's a saying in the business that variable annuities are not bought, they're sold. Okay.
All right. There was another very interesting article, and let this be a warning to everyone, that we need to beware who the beneficiary is. Have you checked who your beneficiaries are?
Increasingly, Linda, investors have had the option of naming beneficiaries on a wide range of financial products. It didn't used to be that way. Now we have all kinds of products that let you put the beneficiary right on them, and the banks happen to be the culprit in many of these cases. I know one financial planner, he is seeing so many problems that he's calling this the bank teller estate destruction. And that's because, I don't know, it's just these beneficiaries that you can write down somewhere, they've got all kinds of situations that...
So basically what you're saying is someone goes into the bank or the brokerage firm or the retirement account, and there's a place in the document that says who is the beneficiary of this account.
Or name your beneficiary.
Right.
And it's on that form, I think, that where they're seeing some
you
of the
designate
problems.
Someone right. as a beneficiary.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
it can be on a CD now. It
right.
can be on lots of things that the banks are selling. But the problem is that many people don't even remember whom they named as a beneficiary on an account 15 years ago. And then on death, it gets very messy because that might not be at all what they were hoping.
Right. And through life, I would guess that most people have changed their minds about certain things. You might be single at the beginning and when you're opening up an account or buying a security. So what kinds of accounts can have beneficiaries?
Well, U.S. savings bonds have had forms for naming beneficiaries for more than 50 years. Bank accounts now and CDs that can have these new POD, payable upon death, or TOD, transfer on death, they can have them. Life insurance always has had a beneficiary, and retirement plan assets can have a beneficiary. So technically, you can have a beneficiary in any one of those.
So if you do name some, who can you name as a beneficiary? Is it restricted in any way?
Well, individuals, trusts, charities, and other organizations can be named as a beneficiary, or you can name no one. There's no specific limitation about who you can name. But a better question might be, who should you not name as a beneficiary? And there I would say minors, disabled people, and in certain cases you should not name your estate, and in certain cases you should not name your spouse.
What's a circumstance where you wouldn't name your estate?
Well, if you name your estate as the beneficiary, let's say that you've got an IRA that's worth $800,000.
Okay, it's large.
It's large. You worked for 30 years at IBM. You rolled over your 401k into an IRA, and now you don't have a beneficiary, and so you just put down my estate.
All right, so when you opened up that IRA, that form, that beneficiary form.
Maybe you just filled in, said my estate.
Okay.
All right. And now your wife, at your death, yes, it goes to your estate, that $800,000. And then let's say the will says I leave everything to my wife. Well, that means maybe $300,000 in taxes got paid and she gets the other $500,000. But if he had put the proper beneficiary saying the wife instead of the estate, she'd have gotten the whole thing without any tax.
Wow, that's a huge difference.
That is a huge difference.
So this is what people need to review or revisit. who their beneficiaries are. And
and you know what, Lynn?
What?
I'll bet you the article said advisors should tell people, check your beneficiaries on a periodic basis and everything.
It did.
Did it say that?
It did.
My answer is nobody remembers to do it themselves. You need to work with a financial planner.
Someone who's aware of these things.
Who has all of them listed, who has checked all of your beneficiaries and periodically is reviewing them with you. That's what you should
do. Just to make sure
that's
your
part
situation.
Of financial planning.
To help you kind of review these things. And you never know, you know, the article also said that, you know, there was one situation where a woman left her estate equally to her two daughters, and she named them in her will. But then she named one daughter or the other as beneficiaries of
individual
her various bank accounts and her brokerage accounts. And the result was just about all of her assets passed outside of her estate, and one of her daughters received much more than the other. Mm. So that can be a cause for some family squabbles.
That's right. Because if your will says one thing and you've got a beneficiary, it says the other. Guess which one wins?
The will. The beneficiary.
The beneficiary overrides the will.
So it should have been better if the woman had named the beneficiaries named as both daughters.
Whatever she wanted, it should have been reviewed and put there periodically.
And it would have been better, the article said, that if the mother had named both daughters as beneficiaries of each of her accounts, or named or not named anyone and allowed the assets to flow into her estate.
That's what I would have
done.
Where
the assets would have been distributed according to the will.
That's what I would have done. I don't like TODs.
Okay.
I really don't like TODs at all.
Okay.
So, the article said that watch out for beneficiary forms that don't allow your assets to pass per stirpes or equally among the branches of your family.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Doug, you know, there's a lot of folks out there that are calling themselves financial planners, financial advisors, and doing all kinds of shows and encouraging people to do their own trading. What do you think about that?
Well, I think the problem is the difference in financial planning and trading. Most people are being sucked in, if I can use that phrase loosely, into thinking that trading is planning, and it's not. I'm going to learn how to trade, and I'm going to go and enroll in this school, and I'm going to make 3% or 5% every month and do online trading and everything. That's raw speculation. Usually you will lose, and that is not financial planning. Financial planning is working with hard numbers, conservative assumptions, building in your living expenses. It's the exact opposite of trading. Unfortunately, there are two main enemies to financial planning today. There are the folks that are doing what you're saying, advertising and sending out invitations to come and learn how to trade and make a fortune by trading. And then there are the others, like the Wall Street Journal articles, that are saying, oh, you can do it yourself. Follow our advice. We will go ahead and give you the clue in this week's financial planning tip. You don't do it on your own. What you need to do is realize that you don't do brain surgery on yourself, and you don't do financial planning on your own.
Well, please look at our website, lfmadvisor.com, during the week, or give us a call at 919-872-7000.
You know, Deborah, I like that. Why don't you say that again? That sounded great.
Well, check out our website at lfmadvisor.com, or give us a call at 919-872-7000.
Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters provides you with a personal financial hotline on any subject where money really matters. For more information, you can call Doug and Linda in Raleigh at 872-7000. That's USA 7000.
Listen again next Sunday at 6:05 for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on 680 WPTF.